Okay, so let's start up. Today we have the very, very interesting sugya, the very interesting topic of man's search for meaning. Famously, Viktor Frankl, who was an Austrian neurologist, psychiatrist. That's ultimately what we would call a psychologist, but you know, back then that's the way these things went. So he pioneered a new school of psychotherapy called logotherapy. Logos in Latin refers to meaning. A logos is a meaning, and this search for meaning really undercuts the whole of the school.
Yeah. Is that where you get the term logo from?
Yeah, exactly. It's a symbol that means. And the part of the decoding of the symbolic, I didn't list it on the paper or any of our sheets, but there's much to do in the realm of psychoanalysis, both in Freud and his Talmidim, especially in Jacques Lacan's school. That's a world that we'll enter together, at different points, especially in Harav Shagar's usages of Lacan to explain different phenomena and different things, but. To backtrack, there's an interesting backstory to Viktor Frankl, is that there was a Jewish opera star who was apparently a relative of Maritz Chias, who Lubavitcher Rebbe sends to go find Viktor Frankl and encourage him in the Rebbe's name. That the Lubavitcher Rebbe found a great deal of meaning, if you would, in Viktor Frankl's system of searching for meaning. However, because Frankl really was flying in the face much of Freud's work, which was the gold standard in those days, he was subject to a lot of ridicule. He himself, Frankl, was a Talmud, a student of Freud, and. Over the course of his experiences, specifically his internment in the concentration camps, he really saw that he didn't feel that Freud's theories really held up via his real life experiences. So he, in his mind, his theories really rested on the idea that it wasn't, any of the drives that kept man alive that really he saw that was taking place in the camps. It was really just a search for meaning, right? A person who had thoughts of, of meaning, of what gave life meaning, that's really what kept people alive. The thought that maybe that they would see their family again, that they would get out, one day they would be free. That was more of what provided man, what people in the camps, the ability to move on. Rav Weinberger said from his father, Alav HaShalom, that the meaning that that his father had was to find that specifically large louse, that big bug, that louse that was biting him at the time, and smush it, and that to him was the task that gave him meaning over the day in lager, as they would say in Yiddish, in the concentration camps. The lice were huge, and just to find that one louse that was biting him and squish it, that was part of what would give him meaning for the day, or their thoughts. Weinberger would say that at night they would lie there in the barracks and think about Cholent and Kugel and whose Yontif food was better, and that's part of what would get them through. And those people who had lost all hope and lost all thought, you knew that it was only a matter of time, that there would be a sunken look, that they had let go of that meaning. So. Based on that, Frankl formulated this concept that really what man needs is what we, in our modern colloquialism, is agency, the ability to choose and to select one's meaning. This theory is also part of what gives the bedrock to ACT, which we've spoken about several times already, acceptance and commitment therapy, that there's two parts. We dealt a lot with the acceptance piece. There's a lot of acceptance that we looked at in the different comics that they drew, if you remember, from those other packets, that the acceptance, which was there, dealing with these thoughts, these intrusive thoughts, instead of trying to fight them or avoid them, which, as we know, never seems to work, fighting them or avoiding them. We just end up creating another cycle, another happiness trap, as Dan Russ would put it, another happiness trap where we're running away from those thoughts. Rather, the acceptance that these thoughts are present is part of what allows us to deal with them. But then also the commitment, what direction do I want? If happiness is not about, being, jubilant all the time, but really living with meaning, right? Living towards a meaning, that's what really provides a person with satisfaction. So it's not, every day is not like daffodils and birthday cake and soda. But every day moves towards meaning, and reaching goals and finding new goals helps provide meaning, and that's what life is about. So there's a great deal, and at ACT they cite Viktor Frankl a lot, of this meaning and searching for meaning. So the A we've got, so the C of the ACT is the commitment or that meaning that they're looking for. Again, Rav Weinberger told me once that a lot of times you'll find that the happiest people in the world are Lubavitchers, because they know they're on a mission. Every Yid is on a mission. Every Jew is on a mission. We all know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent us on a mission. The Neshama was sent from Me'olam Garu Avosenu Be'ever L'Yam, Be'ever L'Nahar. That a person's soul was sent from way, way far away. They tell us a story about it from the Chavetz Chaim, that there was a Jew in the town who was a simple person. They called him Avram Tzvanzig, Avram 20, because he could count to 20. So it was Avram 20. And one day Avram disappeared for like a week and a half, 2 weeks. He came back and they said, Avram, where did you go? He said, I went to Leipzig, to the big fair. Oh, you went to Leipzig? What'd you get there at the big fair? He said, I got a schmecktabak. I got a sniff of snuff. It's powdered tobacco. And the Chafetz Chaim began to cry and said, the person's soul comes so far away, and just for a noseful, just a little sniff of snuff, it should make it. Life should be worth it. Should really have meaning. Realize that you were sent from Kadosh Baruch Hu, sent the Neshama across the cosmos to be here. Make it worth it. Make it meaningful. So Rebbe said that the Lubavitchers, they know they're on a mission. Everything is on a mission. When you know that you have a mission, that's what gives life meaning, right? That's the idea. So let's see a couple of quotations from Viktor Frankl. I got this from the website. I couldn't find my copy of The Will to Meaning, which is the clinical handbook of logotherapy. The introduction and the bestseller, of course, is Man's Search for Meaning. That's one that a lot of people have read in English class. But The Will to Meaning talks a lot more of the clinical underpinnings of the system. So this is from the website. This is also a great summary. So he says, life is not a primary quest for pleasure, as Freud believed, or a quest for power, as Adler taught. Rather, a quest for meaning. The greatest task for any person is to find meaning in his or her life. The drives, and this is part of what made logotherapy much more attractive to Lubavitcher Rebbe, is to say that essentially Freud's thought, I have a dark hair for that also, but Freud's thought is that man is primarily a behemoth. You're primarily an animal, and your pleasure, your drive is just to find pleasure. There's no higher goal to you, it's just to find pleasure. And then it becomes more and more complicated. There are other drives that get in the way of just the base pleasure drive. So you have to act like a civilized behemoth. But, so the Rebbe said, no, you're a neshama. You're not a behemoth. So the drive which we have, then Adler made the behemoth a little bit more menumas, a little bit more cultured, a little bit more respectable. Said, oh, you want power. You don't just want pleasure. But clearly, so what the Rebbe liked a lot more is that Frankl's idea, that no, man, really what you're looking for, all of this is looking for meaning. You're searching for meaning. And that's what it's really, really all about. It's all about this meaning that you're looking for. And that everything that you're doing really is, and that life is all about that. Life has ultimate meaning, and we see in the next paragraph, because there's a deeper overarching meaning for our lives. In moment to moment, meaning can be found in every situation. This, of course, squares up very clearly. I know I'm mishing it. Normally I speak about the psychology, and then I talk about the Judaism and the Chassidus, but here it's so intertwined and so strong, it's kind of hard not to. That the Arizal says that every moment there's a specific tikkun for that moment, that there's never been and never will be again. That I'm interacting with. There's a meaning for every moment. The meaning you discover through connected with connectedness with something beyond and greater than oneself. A greater cause, a bigger thing. That's why all the isms that Jews are constantly getting caught up in over the last 100 years is because the thought and the feeling of being part of something is a rush. Right? Any of these isms, a person gets caught up in it, there's a rush to it because you feel like you're part of something bigger. You feel mechubar. You feel caught up in an ideal, and this ideal is tremendous. A person gets caught up in that ideal, the bigness of it. That's what the allure was. Every one of these things, communism, with everything that it did and the misery that it brought, they thought they were going to save the world. Things just got a little out of control. But they thought that, you know, that everybody should be equal and we're going to save the world. People are evil, so we all should pool our resources. The idea sounds great in paper. Just, go to the gulag and you'll see the other end of it. You go see the shortages of wheat. And the wheat itself is there riding on the train tracks because they're too incompetent to get the wheat to where it needs to be. Because everybody is stuck in their own slot. So what we got is that you want to be connected to something bigger. All these feelings, be something bigger, be a party man, be part of a miflaget, right? A party. So that gives people meaning. So a person needs to say ultimately, and realize ultimately that you have a meaning for life and nobody can tell you what that meaning is. Only you can figure that out. Because when you figure that out, that's that's where that catharsis is reached. When I realize that this is what I need to be doing. Or Freifeld said that he realized that his life really began when he founded his yeshiva Shal Yashuv. Not everything else was significant, but the time he spent with the Rav Putner and as the Sgan Menahel, the Menahel of the Kollel, and of this and of that, and of a middle school Rebbe and a high school Rebbe, and going to Canada. But really, he found that his real calling was when he founded Shal Yashuv. It sort of clicked. All of a sudden, this is the purpose. This is the meaning. This is what it's about. And that. In a word, each man is questioned by life, and he can only answer to life by answering for his own life. To life, he can only respond by being responsible. Right? Only you can answer that question. And that's why, going back a couple of parshios, that God turns to Adam HaRishon and asks, Ayeka, where are you? Where are you? What are you doing? What's up with you? And the question is, whenever we read something in the Torah, it's happening all the time. It's happening to us now. It's not just a historical story about this time. One time there was a guy and there was a girl and there was a fruit, there was a tree and there was a snake and there was God and that was it. But it's happening to us constantly. God's asking us, where are you? And we're like, whatever, God. God asks, where are you? And our job is to answer. Hineni. And we see that subsequently when God calls to Avram, Avram says, here I am. He calls to Moshe. Moshe says, here I am. He calls to Adam. Adam says, I know. I'm hiding. It's the most intense, incredible metaphor. Incredible metaphor. There wasn't even a metaphor that's in our lives all the time. Where are you hiding? Sometimes I'll ask clients in session, what are you running from? What are you hiding from? Where are you going? Where do you think you're running? What's scaring you? And that fear is usually what keeps us from achieving anything in life. Is that fear of what we're running from, of that question of what are you all about? Who are you? What are you all about? And this idea of the logos. Don't tell me we lost the page over here. Oh dear. I'm sorry, we missed some pages. Anyone have my original? Do I have my original? Ah, I have my original. I'm sorry. So, what should be on page 2? Frankl determined there are 3 ways we connect with meaning: through the things we do, the things we feel, through the stance we take towards situations. We call this creative, experiential, and attitudinal attitudes. 3 different ways to do it. We give of ourselves, creative actions, contribute to life through meaningful work, deeds, and achieving goals. Experiences, that things we have, experiences that we receive through meaningful experiences and relationships. Or attitudes, learning to adopt the right attitude to the different situations, especially when we learn our perspective, because there are certain things that we can't avoid. Basically, it's that it's in 3 different sections. It's the choices that we make to do, and then it's about how do we unpack the stuff that we got, right? One thing is what do we choose to do, and the other one is how do we choose to look at what we've received, what we've gotten. There's a Japanese mindfulness exercise that I found in one of mindfulness books, where a person says and asks themselves the question, what have I received and what am I giving? What have I received and what am I giving? What have I taken from the river and what am I putting back into the river, as it were? You can imagine like a Tai Chi type of Zen thing. But it's like, well, what have I given and what have I received and what am I giving? What are the things that I'm doing to make life meaningful, and what's the meaning that I'm finding in all the actions that I'm doing? It's one of the problems that we're experiencing. We had the JSS Shabbos this week, the Shabbaton this week, and they said, well, what do you think the biggest problem is? So one person said, Shidduchim. It's true, we have to find ways for guys to meet girls. It's number one. Number two, education. There's so many people don't know about their Yiddishkeit, their Judaism. It's true. I said, in my mind, one of the biggest problems is apathy. We don't have a way to care. We don't care, and we don't have a way to care. We can't. We find it's just like it's something just plopped in our lives, like our Judaism, our lives is plopped in our lives. It's sort of just waiting for the next episode to load, and that's it. We're sort of very passive, and we need to relearn a sense of activism. We need to relearn back that in the 60s, that's what it was all about. About activism. Even me as a kid or me as a teenager, that the best people. The best guys and gals were going and doing stuff, right? And nowadays we don't always have enough opportunities just to take that rein and be activists, because we're expected just to punch the clock, go get your job, because we're concerned for our future. But at the same time, to find places to be active, and that's why people, you find some of the most inspired people went to Camp Ask. That's Simcha Day Camp, Camp Kelly, right? That's Simcha Day Camp, Camp Simcha. Right? These places where you find, you lead, you do, you give. All of a sudden, you've got a cause, you've got a reason. It's like so powerful. And we have to look for things to do, to find, to get involved, to do. That's these creative actions, the way Frankl's talking about it. Find things to do and be active. And you'll find that's what another thing that lies behind the idea of equestrian therapy. People that come from these difficult backgrounds, difficult life circumstances, addiction and eating disorders, and all that, and they take them to these ranches, and they work with horses. And they work with horses and they care for the horses, and the horses give back also. Right? It's not stam. People poo-poo the relationship that we have with the natural world. You understand that there is an empathy that we have with animals. Anyone with a pet owner can tell you. Maybe goldfish, I don't know, but other animals, there's a relationship and a level of nefesh, right, on the lowest level of soul, but an emotional, reactive level. So you care for the horse, you feel like a different person. You're taking care of this life. It's a fantastic thing. So this creative actions give life meaning, right? They help you choose your meaning for what you want to do. People who suffer trauma oftentimes, they have this thing as well, that they refer to it, there's a book called 7 Keys to Trauma Recovery, and I think the name is Babette Rothstein, maybe it's not, that's not her name, but I think Babette is her first name, I forget the last name. And one of the keys is that in people who suffer trauma, oftentimes they want to make lemonade. It doesn't mean make lemonade, not just beverages, but like bartenders and stuff. That means that they had a situation, and what do they do with it is that they try to become an advocate for it. Right? People who are abused sometimes become advocates for people who are abused. People, you know, who are suffering from addictions and become advocates, you know, for that same thing. They try to turn that life circumstance around, to make their experiences and take these creative actions to make all of it make sense, to make all of it have meaning. That's what it's about, making it have meaning. And in such, that's how, you know, a person finds healing, meaning, and drive to move forward, because otherwise I'm looking for meaning, and what when it's, I just go through the cycle, get up, drink some coffee, you know, and go to, you know, go and whatever, and go through my routine, then you can't find the meaning. Yes.
What do you think he would say about like people that find meaning in the wrong things?
In terms of?
I don't know, let's say for example, like Chas v'Shalom, someone like finds meaning in like a drug addiction. Like they claim that they find meaning in it, but realistically, you could tell the person like.
Well, they don't. You're not really finding meaning in it. You're what's it called? You're running from
maybe
meaning.
Maybe it's a bad example.
You're running for meaning. You're running from pain. Most addictions start by because there's a piece my friend Joey Rosenfeld, or Joey as they call him, talks about this in terms of addiction. It's based in Jung and in the Blue Book of the 12 Steps, the big book of the of Alcoholics Anonymous. That the addict is just in pain. There's nothing like morally wrong with them in their root. It's that they're just in so much pain, and the substance helps numb that pain. Now, ultimately, everything becomes convoluted in just a way of just trying to run away from that pain, and then that's where all the, you know, all the sibuchim, all the complications arise from, because, you know, that then ultimately they'll lie and they'll hurt people because they're so wrapped around in their pain and avoiding their pain that they don't see anyone else's pain. It's not, you know, that and that's why part of Alcoholics Anonymous is then to realize that they've hurt people and to try to make amends for all of that. But the root of the alcoholism, the addiction is that there's this pain and the substance gets it away. So it's not a, you know, so finding meaning in something is something which is helping, right? It's something which is doing and is doing something positive. Usually things that are negative aren't really not finding meaning. They're really avoiding meaning and avoiding pain. So, I wanted to share with you then, like I said, it's all sort of curled around Judaism anyway, but what's interesting is that the Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe, second Ger Rebbe, writes the following. He says that, like, this week, Avram stands at the gate of the tent, at the entrance to the tent, the Petach HaOhel, the entrance to the tent. I'm very into any time the Torah starts using this, using doorways, right? Because we just think, oh yeah, it's a doorway. What's the big deal? A doorway is something which stands in between two places, right? A doorway. That's why we put a mezuzah on it. Also, we put mezuzah on doors. Like, well, yeah, what do you call it? It's just a piece of architecture. Like, whatever. Like, holds the door. What's the big deal? A doorway is a gateway between two places, the inside and the outside. I go in, I come out. It's really, really strong. So Avram stands at the gateway, right? That something opened up. Something's big. He's standing there trying to bring us to this doorway. What does he want us to go into, right? He wants us to walk through a certain door. Avram stands at the doorway. That's like deep. Now, what is it? The Sfas Emes has a rule. There are certain, when you learn a lot, you know, a lot of any one book, you'll start to get the rules. Certain authors do certain things. They have certain hang-ups. Certain people like to talk about certain things a lot. You know, you'll see maybe your shul rabbi, he has certain things he comes back to all the time. You know, certain teachers that you might have, they'll say the same things over and over and over again, because that's one of their meanings. The Sfas Emes is very, very big on that there is one point that connects everything together. He calls this the hidden inner point, Nikuda HaPinimit. And that every Sfas Emes is all about the search for this point. This point of course, meaning. The search for meaning, the search for that point that connects everything, which, of course, is a Kaddish Baruch Hu. I remember once, I was walking with this famous rabbi. His name is Itamar Schwartz. I mean, he's not so famous. His books are famous. people don't know who he is because he wrote everything anonymous. And then at one point or another, some of the big Kabbalists made him go public. But the doxy or moxy, I forget the phrase, whatever it is, that they made him go public. But so for a while, it was just like the author of Bilvavi Mishkan Evne, the author of the books, Bilvavi, it was called. But his name is Itamar Schwartz. He's about my age. So when I met him, we were both 30, and he, at that point, I think, had written about 25 books. Something crazy like that. Truth is, he only wrote one book, and the rest of them were just books based on recordings of his classes. So I don't feel as bad. But he said we were walking and we were talking about the Sfas Emes, and he says to me, you know, the Nikuda Penimit, Nikuda Penimit, Maze Nikuda Penimit. Well, he's like, what does this mean? This internal point, this point of everything. What does that mean? Why does he keep saying it over and over again? I said a different thing. I said to him, I think it's different things for different people, but it's that point of meaning that unites all of creation, that brings all of creation together. Well, of course, it's the Ribbono Shel Olam, God, but it's I'm searching for the point of it all. Avraham Avinu is the one who's searching for the point of it all, right? The point of everything, right? And that's how he led him to his discovery that there's one God, you know. And then he went out to go teach it to everybody. So then Avraham is standing by the door, right? He circumcises himself, right? And that also, when a person's mald, a person has a bris mila, that means that they're touching that world of perfection, that world of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that there's something more than the physical world. Literally, the bris mila is when the foreskin is cut off, that covers over the person. Right? That's what arla means. It means something covers over. You want to take off the cover and see what's the hidden meaning behind everything. What's the point of it all? What does this mean? That's the whole thing. So Avram then stands at the gate because he wants to bring us all into the club. He wants to bring us all into the understanding. He sits at the gate of the tent. Why? Because he wants to bring us all in on this message. That there's a point of everything. There's a point to everything. He wants us to open the door and walk in. That's the point. That's why it means he's sitting at the entrance to the tent. So that's where it says, Hashem Yitbarach Ratsa Sheitekan Zeh HaDerech of Ureinu. Hashem wanted that Avram should pay for us the way Shulchol HaAdam Limtzir Nekuda Achat. That a person could go and find this point. Even in this world, he should open for us the entrance to the tent. Avram sits outside to bring us in on the secret. The same way, like Viktor Frankl is telling us, you need to find meaning. Avram Avinu is sitting at the tent saying, guys, gotta walk in the door. Gotta find meaning. Or like the Matrix we saw yesterday, right? Gotta take the pill. I'm only offering you the truth. Right, come on in through. So Rebbe Nachman, in the first Torah, it's a big, big Torah. You can go look on it in Safari or read the whole thing in English. Rebbe Nachman, all of his Torah, his teachings are introductions. They're all beginnings. Right? Every one of the lessons is an opening, is a beginning, is a petach. He says, "Havamisha eno mikasher atzma asechel v'chachma v'chiyut shiyesh b'chol davar." So a person needs to try to attach themselves and find the wisdom, the meaning, the intellect that's within everything. Zebechina Esav shebizet ha'pechora. That a person who doesn't is like Esav. Esav says there is no meaning. There's no meaning. There's no meaning to anything. So he says, "Ve'yivez Esav es ha'pechora." He says it's all pointless. What are you trying? What are you trying to figure this out? Hine ani holech lamut. I'm gonna die. We're going to catch up to that in a couple of parshios. He says, I'm going to die. What's the point? What's the point of any of this? What's the point of all of this? It's pointless. There is no seichel b'chol davar. And so he says, an Esav despised the rights of the firstborn. That is the intellect. The intellect is called the first. The search. So if you look, we're not going to read all of this. Where's number four? Three. Four, there we go. Shagar speaks about the same point, that this is exactly what we're looking for, and as he continues into the fifth page, basically what he says is as follows: he says that a person's looking to see what all this means to me, trying to decode all this to me. As I said, looking at it, understanding it, and beginning to think there is a meaning here. What's it speaking to me? And until a person can start to look for that, start to decode that, they're just going to be lost. Right? So as a result, that's what the person needs to do. The person needs to start looking again for that meaning, start to decode that meaning, and understand, how do I connect to all of it? How do I interact with all of it? This is the search for meaning. This is part of what gives a person's life, and to stop running away. To stop running away from everything and realize that right here, there's an entrance to the door. There's a way in to get it. So that is really what I want to explain for tonight. And we should be zocha to answer the question and find meaning.